Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic, and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 154, being recorded on the 16th of November, 2016, with special guest Asir Selvasingh. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Kale, Evan, and Asir. Now, before we give Asir a chance to introduce himself and let us know what he is up to in the Azure space, let's do a quick roundup of updates. I know, we recorded another podcast earlier this today, so this is the second podcast of the day for us, and so we already covered a lot of updates in the first podcast, but apparently Kale found some more updates in the last 5 hours.
That's how fast things are releasing, right?
Exactly. That's how fast the updates are coming in from Azure. So, okay, Kale, what's hot off the press there?
I think the big one here, and this wasn't even like a broad blog post or anything, was we'll send a link on the show notes about this, but the documentation. So if you just go to like azure.com and there's a, you know, a little nav bar at the top, and one of the things is documentation. If you go click on that now, you'll see that there's been a pretty significant redesign there. And I think it's actually really nice. If you should take a look at it, you can basically drill into whatever component you're looking at. Like if it's a whatever service, if it's compute, networking, whatnot, you can also come in as a developer on the architecture side and kind of approach it from different angles about what you're looking for. So I think it's pretty nice, and it's pretty visual, right? So when you go through the different things, it's not just a lot of text like go click on this or try this. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of screenshots showing you exactly what to do as you're doing the various things with compute, storage, whatnot. So it's pretty nice.
Yeah, and there was I know one of the content folks, we were trying to get a content change, and it was blocked, right? Because we were doing a big migration to this. So we kind of had a period where we couldn't get new stuff in. And apparently there's also a whole bunch of other stuff under this to kind of make it much more accessible across more platforms and more, screen sizes and the like. So this was a major, architectural and kind of rethinking of docs on top of just the things you're talking about, Kale, from the visuals and whatnot as well.
Yeah, I think it's really nice. It has nice like comment sections and all that kind of, you know, social, I guess, type stuff. And then it also has like themes now. So people love that kind of stuff, right? With the different IDEs being able to make it dark and light. And you can actually, like, there's a theme thing now for this, which is kind of cool.
Nice. Hey, I just switched mine to dark theme.
I think of a lot of the Microsoft applications have now been themed, and all of them support the dark theme, I think.
Yep.
And that's nice. It's very, very nice on the eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. Evan, anything in there that you like?
Coming up on the holidays, right? The Santa Cloud, a little bit of humor here, but, if you want to talk about, and we've talked about this kind of stuff before, talk about, if you're, some of these tax companies around the, tax season or the, retailers around Black Friday and the like. Santa is an absolute good example of somebody else who, for a couple of weeks a year, his IT needs are incredibly high, and then the rest of the year he takes it off.
Right.
Perfect example of something that does really well with the on-demand world of the Azure Cloud.
Yep. That would be that is definitely the case. One of the updates that I liked a lot is the app service now that's on Linux, right? I think we know that app service used to be on Windows and now it supports Linux. But since it's on Linux, I guess a lot of the folks in the Linux world, besides using Tomcat as a web server for their web apps, they also use containers. It's been very popular, the Docker containers in the Linux space. And so now App Service supports bringing Docker containers within App Service on Linux so that, you could have App Service manage all that for you. At the same time, you've already doing a lot of work on in your own Docker container. You just have to upload the image into the app service and get going right there. So there's nothing much for you to do. And app service would manage all those containers and scaling them out for you. So I think that was a nice thing. And I think one of the advantages of using that is also that you get the ASP.NET Core support in the container as well. So now you have Docker containers that Microsoft provides images that have ASP.NET Core pre-baked in them, and so that support is also available in there so that you can build ASP.NET apps in a container on Linux in Azure. Boy, that's a handful.
Is that, have you guys used, I don't know if you've used this at Shadi, because I'm just wondering, what's the interface like? Is it like, because app service is kind of like a thing, right? So is it like you go in and provision a new app service and now you have a choice, like you pick between Linux and Windows, or is it just like supported and you just run an app service and it has all the support for whichever one you need? I guess I'm just.
I think you have to make a choice. It's one or the other.
Okay.
It's yeah, right up front. And I mean, I guess one of the nice things about I think we talked about Kudu, right, a while ago, with one of our guests, and that's sort of the glue as well. I think I got to check to see if they do support the Kudu on Linux, but I think eventually, once they have that Kudu hooked into the Linux infrastructure, I think that'll be nice because that's always been the I think the positive side of the app services, that whole Git deployment model and things like that it's supported, and the Kudu console that you could go in and do the debugging and things like that, right? So you have to have that extended into the app services, into app service for Linux as well. So I'm hoping that that they'll eventually get to that place.
Yeah, and speaking of deployment and these types of things, the Visual Studio team had a post out here about the team services. They have like these digests where they, do a dump of the new things that are kind of in their platform. And one of the things is I don't know if we talked about this, but the Microsoft Teams software is now integrated into team services. So that's kind of nice for from a development sense. You got that nice interface there to do all your planning and all that kind of stuff up there for development as well as code repo, but now, the team support too, so they kind of full circle there.
So I suppose that means that you would have to have an Office 365 account, right, to get Teams, and then Visual Studio Online as well. And that's how it gets hooked up. Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's the Teams is based on the groups in O365, so yeah.
Cool.
And there's a bunch of other stuff there you should take a look. I mean, there's like code search has been improved for Java. So you're able to do searches, textual searches in there, and it can actually read Java files. And a bunch of other things in there. So I'll let the listeners go ahead and read through them. But lots of cool stuff coming from that group.
And then we've haven't talked much about Visual Studio Code. As you know, that's our new our latest and greatest open source I guess version of Visual Studio that runs on multiple platforms. And it's based on the Electron framework, I believe. And they've been expanding the Azure support for that. And the newest Azure service that's plugged into Visual Studio Code is the Azure Data Lake service. They've added tools for Visual Studio Code, especially the USQL, I guess, editor and things like that. So that's something to check in if you're using Data Lake. Anything else? Or did we cover everything? Let me see. I think that was it, right?
No, we can give another 20 minutes and see what else gets released.
By the
So,
time we're done with our survey, yeah,
yeah.
there'll be some more stuff. All right, I guess then let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Asur. Thank you very much for taking the time to join us on the podcast, Asur. Could you please give our listeners a little bit about your background and what you like to do or what's your passion in terms of Azure and things like that?
Sure. I'm Arthur. I'm a member of the Azure Developer Division. I specifically focus on Java on Azure developer experience. So Java is my passion. Making it very simple for developers is my other passion. I've done a lot of programming on Azure, so I have a pretty good experience on how developers approach and how they deploy and how they configure things like that.
Now, what have you been working on most recently in the team?
Most recently, we announced simpler Azure management libraries for Java. It's a It's a Java library that you can use to manage Azure resources. Particularly here, our goal is to improve the developer experience by providing a higher level object-oriented API optimized for readability and writability and make the developers as productive as they can be.
Now, in this is Evan. So there, you actually, it looks like there's an analogous version for .NET as well. So it looks like you're doing this across multiple languages, right?
Correct. Our team is also implementing the .NET version. So recently we announced the simpler Azure management libraries for .NET. The goal is same as well, right? We want to improve the developer experience by providing a higher level API for them so that they don't have to deal with the low-level request response kind of operations, which makes it very tedious and pretty long for developers.
Now, how did you guys, what kind of metrics, et cetera, did you look at to say, oh, you know, we really need to sit down and make this simpler? Like, were you getting direct feedback from developers, or were you able to gather some metrics in terms of how people were building it? What was your approach to that?
So there's a way we were developing this library before we got into this simpler mode. We used to describe the REST operations in a file called Swagger,
mm-hmm.
and that pretty much captures the machine level information of how the REST API is laid out. Using that Swagger, we used to auto-generate the code. And when we auto-generated the code, it's pretty much tied at the request response level, the REST API layer level, right? So at that point, when they write the code, let's take a very simple example of you're creating a virtual machine. To create a virtual machine, you write maybe three, four pages of code. And within wow. those four pages of code, you have to figure out all the input values. And to create a virtual machine, you require, there are roughly about 140 parameters. So you have to figure out the values to put in, and you need to figure out what is required and what is optional. And you also have to know what is modifiable and what is not modifiable. So what developers were telling us to get to that create a virtual machine, they almost took about 3 to 4 weeks to figure that out, the ins and out by trial and errors, right?
Wow.
So what we did is we took that feedback and we took, when we define at a higher level, it turns out it's only a one statement to create a virtual machine, whether it's C# or Java. It's just one statement to create a virtual machine. Similarly, one statement to create a network, virtual network, and one statement to create a virtual machine scale set, right? So anything you take, we want to boil down to this one statement for you.
No, hold on right? a minute. You said 143 inputs required. How did you manage to boil that down to one statement? I'm curious.
Yeah, that is the key, right? So what we do is there are three things in play there. So the first thing is we used a pattern, a fluent interface-inspired pattern. In this pattern, what happens is the pattern is very simple. When you are creating something, you start with the definition, you end with the create. If you're updating something, you start with an update and you apply, right? So if you're defining a virtual machine, what is the minimal that you need to do? Right? And what are the smart defaults that we can kick in? And what are the defaults that we can leverage on the server side, right? The back end of Azure, right? So if you look at that pattern, when you start with the define and create, you start with the define, you specify a data center, and then you specify a resource group. You specify the minimal necessary of network parameters. You pick an image, you specify your credentials, and there you go. All you have to do is dot create and it'll happen, right? Now, in that sequence, the entire thing is one statement. You start with the dot with region, with resource group, with network, existing network or a new network, with popular Linux image or popular Windows image. And depending on which one you chose, you can get either the API will automatically prompt you whether you want an admin user password, or if you chose a Linux, it'll say root username. And it'll walk you through to create in one sentence, right? One statement. Now, that pattern gets you the one statement. Now, within that, we are assuming lots of smart defaults, right? Now, although we are assuming lots of smart defaults, what the user can, developer can do is, before they punch in the last dot create, they can pick whatever they want from the optional methods.
So
it gives you the flexibility as well as the simple statement.
So when I look at this, right, and I've been doing Azure for a long time now, and you know, when I look at what you've done with this, in some ways it feels like going back to Azure Classic, right, which was a lot, because a lot of things were embedded within the virtual machine, right? The virtual machine was kind of the overarching object. It was a much simpler approach. Azure Resource Manager, everything is a first-class object. It takes a lot more effort to kind of define what I want. You know, it brings a lot of power, right, because I can carry my public IPs around, I can carry my networks around, things like that. But this feels in some ways like I'm getting back to the simplicity of Classic. Was that kind of the mentality of the model, or was that you just wanted to throw all that away and figure, okay, what's the simplest we could do?
I think what's the simplest that we can do without any baggage? What is the simplest that they can do? At the same time, if you want them to create something sophisticated, it's just merely an extension of that story.
Wow. Yeah, because, I mean, it is very, very readable when you look at this. We'll put some samples on the website, or put some links on the website. But this is, you know, like you can actually just look at this and tell what you're going to end up with.
Now, you said you use the Fluent syntax. Does that also work? Same syntax work in Java?
Yeah, we took a pattern and we implemented it in Java as well as C#. If you step back and look at both the code, they'll almost look alike, except for the casing difference or the way you name it in different languages. But otherwise, it should be a natural sentences in both of these languages.
Impressive. Now, what's the surface area for the new API? Does it cover all of the services, or various things in Azure?
Today, it supports major parts of Azure Virtual Machines, Virtual Machine Scale Sets, Storage, Networking, Resource Manager, Key Vault, and Batch. I'm happy to say that the next preview version is a work in progress, and we'll be adding support for more Azure services and tweaking the API. Now, we also have a survey up there for developers to tell us how to prioritize services and features that will help them, right? Because there are many things to be done here, but if we can understand what they're using immediately, then we can prioritize that way. So based on that survey, whatever input that we are getting, we're able to prioritize our sequence. I'll be happy to send you that link as well to you, so you can share it with your listeners.
In Azure, is any of this stuff, at least the source for it or anything, is this open source, or is this something that's just close with our team and we just take input in this way? I'm just wondering.
It's all open source. Anybody can check out. Anybody can clone it. We also have the NuGet packages for C#. We have the Maven modules for the Java developers. They can just add those references and start using them. And when they find issues, they can just go there and file bugs directly in the GitHub repo. And if they want to propose changes, they can also create a pull request and send it to the repo, and our team will engage developers at that point.
That's awesome.
I'm actually, I may have to, you know, start begging and pleading behind the scenes to get this shipped with, Azure PowerShell itself, because, you know, I'm in support and work with customers all the time who all they want to do is create the VM or create the network or whatever. They don't want to fight through all the PowerShell complexity. I'm absolutely going to be, you know, pointing people to this who are just, you know, they just want to create the VM so they can do, you know, whatever, right? But that's they don't want to get sucked into all the details with that. Because this is great for that.
Now, Asir, does this support the .NET Core, or is there any plans to support that?
It supports .NET Core.
Wow, that's amazing. So there's, you know, obviously there's multiple ways, right, to create these Azure resources now. Of course, there's the ARM template. You could use PowerShell, as Evan just mentioned. You could use the Azure CLI, I suppose. And then there's all these programming languages. So I'm just curious, so like, what is the, I guess, you know, what kind of use cases have you seen that people say, oh, you know, we're going to write this in Java and not use I don't know, an ARM template or Azure CLI? Like, what are some of the reasons they would write these, like use these languages to create some of these services?
So there are, if you're authoring a tool, that's one use case. And if you're implementing the tool using Java, or if you're implementing the tool using C Sharp, that's one use case. If you're building plugins for CI/CD tools, where those are creating Azure resources and managing them, updating them, that's another use case. If you have an organization where you have a numerous repeatable task, right, and those repeatable tasks are creating, updating resources, then you can use these libraries and create them, keep it ready so that you can execute it. Then there are several users who have UI tools that does specific Azure resource management, which is tuned and tailored for their organization, right? For example, if somebody wants to create 100 virtual machines and they want to parallelize that, right? And they can use this library to create that, and that can happen in parallel, which means if you're creating a Linux virtual machine, that's 100 virtual machines. It can happen in 2 to 3 minutes.
True. Yeah, that's a good point.
Right. So there's power to the library as well. So anywhere you want programming help to create these resources, as opposed to using Azure Portal or your scripting using PowerShell or CLI, this is your natural thing. Now, our team actually produces these libraries for many languages. C Sharp is one, Java, Node, Python, Ruby, PHP, Go. We produce for many languages. But in terms of providing a simpler surface, currently we are offering for C Sharp and Java.
And is NuGet the way to get them, or for at least for .NET? Or what's the
If you go to the Azure SDK for .NET repo, I can share the link with you. If you go there, there's a section on download, and in the download section, there's a table that enumerates all the NuGet packages. Even you can click and it'll start downloading right away.
Okay. And do they have like sample apps as well to just help people get started? I think Evan, you said there's some samples, right?
We have
plenty of sample code that illustrates management scenarios in Azure virtual machine scale set, storage, networking, resource matcher, key vault, and batch. And most importantly, I want to say when you're playing with these samples, there are three easy steps. You click on the specific sample you want. After that, you clone the repo. You change your prompt to that directory, or open it using Visual Studio, or if it is Java, use Eclipse or IntelliJ. Just call the command. If it is Java, you just call MEN, clean, compile, exile, execute, and it'll just execute immediately. Similarly, you just restore and execute inside .NET. It'll just run. So everything is packaged and ready to go.
Now, this thing sounds like super easy and super convenient, but are there any like things to watch out for, or gotchas, you know, things that people should watch? Like, there's a lot of flexibility here, but I think sometimes that can get you into trouble if you don't watch out. So is there anything that developers should take care of as they use these libraries or try to do a lot of things with Azure resources and creating them and tearing them down, taking them, you know, making changes, etc.?
So there's flexibility, and it's very easy as well. So if you're creating lots of resources, you have to plan out your resources and then create. Otherwise, you know, you can end up creating lot of resources, like just like the way I just mentioned, you can create 100 Linux virtual machines. It start billing right away, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to plan your resources and then start creating it. In terms of other gotchas, so I think we are selectively supporting a few set of services now. So if you want support for other services, you have to, it's just a matter of time. It'll arrive, but you can give us the feedback and tell us which service you want us to prioritize. We can prioritize. So that's probably something that they have to watch out, right? So for example, if they want to manage something that is not supported, then they probably have to go to CLI or Portal for right now.
Okay, excellent. That's great. I'm glad you guys are thinking about this. So, is there any other questions you guys have for answer?
No, I mean, this is, I think what caught my attention when I really saw this, or when I first saw this, is, like I said, I've been doing Azure for a long time, done ARM, done Classic, lots of PowerShell, and even I struggle with doing this stuff sometimes, right? Remembering which parameters go where and the like, and this just seemed incredibly easy to just, oh, I haven't done this in 2 weeks. Oh, yeah, just dot create, dot, dot, and keep going through.
I'm super impressed that they have the .NET Core version. That's very impressive. Excellent.
I think this is really cool because the what I've seen people use these tools for specifically is around, when they're hooking it into some other orchestration tool for their infrastructure. So they'll say, "Great, we have these ARM templates and we have this way to do that." And they're like, "Can we just write something in Java? Because we already have this thing running over here that we use to. That's how we did our infrastructure before. And you have a way for us to do that." So I think this will be a great fit for that.
Well, Asir, thank you very much for that update. That was some good stuff for our listeners, and we thank you for laying that out for them. So we'll take some links from you afterwards, and we'll put them in the show notes so we could share them with our listeners. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Oscar.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.